this is Don Bluth, and you're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers.
This is the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 41, Monsters University. We're okay! We're okay!
Monsters, it's time to break it down for the episode 41 of the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. My name is Brock Pearson, a tribute to Brock Pearson, and we're here with the Animation Addicts. We got Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I'd like to introduce my favorite host of all time. He's like the coolest person ever, Mason Smith.
Oh, thank you, Brock Pearson. You're so great.
Yeah, you're the greatest, Mason. And we got two other people. I don't really know what their names are. Chelsea Robson.
Hi.
Dead Morgan Stradling.
Hey, Brock.
How's it going? Okay, the first challenge is I'm going to throw these poison sea urchins at you that glow, and you have to dodge them. Okay, here we go. One, two, three.
Brock, stop, stop. Brock, come on.
Who invited him? It's not the scare game.
It's not the scare game. It's just the podcast.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just go over here then.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Boy, that guy's a lot to deal with.
Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you deal with the Greek council.
Oh, my goodness. Or the librarian on campus.
Oh, she's crazy.
Awesome.
She's nuts. Awesome. She will totally throw you out of the building. Mason, fact, never have I ever been shushed at any university library I've ever gone to.
Really?
And I've been to four colleges. That's quite an achievement. Shouldn't I get a scholarship or something? This episode is on Monsters University. Everybody should know that by now. So I saw it yesterday.
I as well.
Yeah, I saw it yesterday. I got tickets to two advanced screenings. Backstage Online and like the other See It First were like sending me emails like how was your screening of Monsters University? I was like, don't remind me. The thing is I'm two hours away from any of those theaters that do advanced screenings, and
yeah.
So for my college fund's sake, I decided to, you know what, I decided to go and see it with the common people yesterday.
Oh yeah. Nice twist.
That's who I am, animation fans. I fight for the people. I fight for the users, okay? Yeah, but I don't have any money, so I saw it at the local theater yesterday.
Even at the theater that I went to, I went to the 7 o'clock showing, and there was lines for every showing.
Oh, nice.
I was like, not wow.
Arizona.
I was really impressed. I mean, and the theater that I'm at has 25 theaters in it. So there's a lot of space. And yet I think they had like five or six of them all for Monsters U, and they were all like lined up.
Holy cow.
Well,
I can't even.
The Pixar fan boys and girls come out in droves. Like
they
even remember at the screening there were, I mean, I remember when I went to Brave and like when I first started going to the early screenings, it was a huge deal and I was like so excited and I was like, yes, you know, I'm a Disney fan, I'm a Pixar fan. But I mean, there were people wearing clothes
Whoa, people were wearing clothes?
Well, who'd have thought, right? No. They were wearing like
Monsters I know Arizona's hot, but.
No shoes, no shirt, no problems.
It's basically Arizona movie screenings for you. Nudist colonies. No. So they were wearing Monsters University clothes and like their favorite, everyone was dressed up, which was surprising. Not everyone, but a lot of people. So even, I really wish I could have gone to one of the midnight screenings and seen all the super fans out. But it's funny because Mark was in front of me after and he was giving his comments to the screener. And these Monsters University Pixar fans were like, oh my gosh, I love his Letterman jacket. Where did he get it? And this other kid was like, I don't know. He probably got it like Disneyland or something. I know they have early merchandise. And it was just really funny because his grandma or his mom made it.
His mom literally made it for him.
Yeah, and it's like pretty, it's like,
so it's got heart.
It has heart, which some people say Monsters University doesn't have that much heart. So yeah,
what?
It was just really funny.
See, I got a problem with comments like that, but we'll get into that in the discussion.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married, We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
So that's cool. We all saw it. We're going to have our discussion on it. Okay, so I went at 11:30 in the morning, and I was like, come on, Shannon, let's go. And she's like, you know, there's going to be like a million little kids there, right? I was like, no, kids don't get up early these days. It's summer. Because when we walked in, it was like, yeah! And I was like, oh, we barely found a seat. We almost had to do what we did at Sundance a couple years ago and just sit in two different seats.
Oh,
married and having to sit in two different seats. I mean, you know, two different seats that weren't adjacent. Yeah. And so finally we wedged ourselves between some drooling, slobbering children, toxic children. And, you know, it's like I can't laugh at movie trailers when all the kids are laughing. You know, because then I'm just a little kid then. Saw some pretty, I mean, I've seen these previews already. We saw, oh, what was that? Despicable Me 2.
Mm-hmm.
Guess Who's Back. And that's cool. I like the line, and weapons! He's like really excited about having new weapons.
That one wasn't on my screening.
Yeah, we did Despicable Me 2, the Frozen teaser trailer.
Uh-huh.
And, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs Part 2, before it was titled Revenge of the Leftovers.
Uh-huh.
But then it would have broken the record that Owls of Gahool set for most syllables in a movie, animated movie title. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs Part 2 Revenge of the Leftovers. That's almost 20 syllables, folks. Remember what was it, episode 2 or like episode 3 where we were talking about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saved them. I saved Sony.
Thank you.
Obviously they listened to that and internalized it. Yes. So those were the main trailers, and then and then the Planes trailer, which I saw already for Epic.
Mm-hmm.
Farm Boy.
Yeah, and mine was Planes, Turbo as well.
Oh, yeah, we saw one for Turbo, too.
And
Light Shadow.
Yeah, and then this Lego movie trailer. Something about that.
Ooh.
Yes, we will talk about that.
Oh, it tingles. It's like the word Mufasa with Bonsai. And that one hyena. Oh, it tingles.
So let's talk about it. Let's go into the news.
Okay.
So the Lego movie. I love that the Lego Corporation is, you know, capitalizing on what people already do on millions and millions of YouTube videos online, making stop motion videos with Legos. But they're
It's stop motion, isn't it?
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm assuming it is. Maybe it's computer generated, but
it does not look that CG.
It looks stop motiony to me, which is kind of awesome. And I love that they're like, millions of people watch these. Maybe we can do our own official one, and millions of people can watch ours.
Yeah,
but they have like a really awesome spin on everything, and it's like totally jam packed with humor and comedy, and just making fun of Legos and themselves, which makes it fun.
Yeah, you can really see the trademarks of Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, speaking of. And then what might explain the stop motion is that Chris McKay, the director of Robot Chicken off of Adult Swim, he is also co-directing.
Ah, cool.
So it's a triple direction. And so I watched the thing and I was like, okay, so it's going to be like It's going to be like the Lego video games, you know, where it's kind of like CG and they're kind of, it's kind of Gumby, you know, their limbs, you know, they got some lattice deformers on the limbs and they can, you know, they're kind of like made out of jelly. But this is like, this looks like straight up stop motion. It, like the mouths are, because that's how they do the mouth movement on Robot Chicken. They just kind of paste like a, you know, like a little vector graphic of a mouth and it's just kind of, it looks kind of clunky. And so, It took me a couple times of I had to watch the trailer a couple times to kind of warm up to it, but it looks kind of funny. Like, I just like how there's all these like cameos of like it's not DC's Batman, it's Lego's Batman, you know? Yeah. So it's like Will Arnett who's doing Batman's voice. And
one of my favorite people.
It's amazing. I'm assuming you guys watch Arrested Development.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think this is going to be a really funny movie, and I'm definitely going to watch it. Here's what I had a problem with, though. Okay, so Will Ferrell is, he's like the villain named President Business. And apparently there's a bad guy named Bad Cop, voiced by Liam Neeson. So the bad guys are the police and business.
Figures.
No, I can see it's kind of like the Borrowers. Like it's like the big business guy wants to like ruin everyone's fun. So I guess I get that. But like, can't you get like a, I don't know.
Wah, wah.
You can have like a real villain instead of just making it all social. But I don't know. Maybe I'm jumping the gun here.
My favorite is like all the different plays on different Lego characters over the years. Cause like, it's funny. It's like you took the Lego box, you know, that some kid has under his bed and just started making a movie with it, you know, and so, you know, it's the 2002 NBA All-Star team. There's like Raphael from the Ninja Turtles. There's like this random 1985 Space Ranger.
Yeah, the Space Cadet from the 80s. Yeah, that's a really good point because, like, as a kid, you don't have, like, all the Legos. You just have a bunch of sorted Legos from different worlds, and you can, like, assemble your own teams of heroes together, and it's cool. So that's a good point. It's like, basically, like, homage to, like, the Lego spirit of, like, hey, I've collected, this is my collection, and this is what I got, and it's all I have, so this is what I'm going to make it out of.
Yeah, we're just going to roll with it. I can't wait to see this movie, because I'm sure they're just going, like, every little nuance about Legos. Like, you know, Raphael holding, like, the Lego pizza, and, like, the Lego, you know, the Lego parrot will probably make, you know, the Lego skeleton. Like, all these really cool people are probably going to, you know, make cameos or have appearances, and they're just going to kind of, like, make fun of Legos in a very, like, good-hearted, fun way. And I honestly, like, I'd heard they were making this movie, I hadn't seen a trailer for it, and I actually really want to see this movie now. So kudos to them.
Yeah, when I saw some of the first like press things on Lego.com, they were announcing all of the characters in it, and I was like, what? Batman's gonna be, what? Superman? Wait, what? The Ninja Turtles? What? So this is gonna be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So on to number two, our next bit of news comes from the world of Frozen. Disney's 53rd animated film will be releasing November of 2013 this year. Woohoo! Mm-hmm. We've been following this story for quite some time.
Are they okay, sure they're doing?
Newscaster Chelsea, we have been following this story for many months.
Breaking news. Okay, so Frozen, are they sure they're still going to release it in November?
Yeah.
Not to be cold-hearted, but the so-called teaser trailer didn't really tease me or trailer me for anything that the movie was going to be about, unless the whole movie is about Olaf and Sven's strange relationship. I don't know, I have mixed feelings about it. Like, it's cool that we see something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it get you excited to see it? Like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, with the snowman, you know, and the snowman, like, he's just such a mystery to me. Like, okay, so he's a snowman, he's alive, I get that, Disney. But it's like, he loses his nose, but the rest of him can just kind of, like, bond together magically, you know, but his nose is a problem.
Quite
like, he just can't, like, accio nose and just, you know, get it, like, sucked back into his nose. But anyway, like, I love Disney. I mean, they never get tired of their quintessential and time proven plot points. You know, the guy that everybody loves
is losing body parts, losing
dismemberment,
allergies
and dismemberment are all too common in Disney. Sneezy in the first. It was the first anime. Hello. No, it's just like, you know, guy is like moving along. Something bad happens. He's put at conflict with either nature or with the world around him or another person. And then you think he's going to achieve what he wants. And then it doesn't happen. And he gets really sad. Low point. And then something happens and he's fine. And then hilarity ensues as another conflict happens. But so, yeah, that's cool. I thought the animation on Sven was really cool.
Yeah.
I don't complain that there are Disney animals that act like dogs.
Oh, yeah, that was kind of a big complaint, like, because wasn't Maximus kind of like that, and they're saying, oh, yeah, they're just doing the same thing.
He acted like a dog in one part.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But Maximus had an attitude, you know, and a mm-hmm. personality that I don't think Sven's going to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely not.
And you so know? I heard that this part, this trailer or sequence isn't even in the film from people I know who went to the test screening of Frozen. So this is very much like Monsters University, where that one first trailer where, you know, they're using Mike as a disco ball, they're having a party, like, that wasn't even in the movie. And so this is just sort of to get attention and, you know, laughs. Were people laughing in your theater when you saw this?
Yeah, they
yes,
the kids
because
laughed.
It was filled with 5-year-old kids.
Yeah, all the 5-year-olds laughed.
See, I'd be surprised. I want to see what a room full of adults would think. Because, I don't know, I thought it, I saw it, and I, like, it was funny. It, like, made me smile, but I was just kind of, like, in the background. I'm like, this isn't what I wanted. I wanted princesses, kingdoms, palaces, and songs.
I wanted my music, dang it.
Yeah, yeah, well, like, I wanted a bit more plot and substance and something to, like, get me excited about what I was going to see. You know, I guess this got me excited. Something is better than nothing.
Yeah, I think here's the thing. They've got just a few more months before it comes out. And so they've just gone through and they've decided, all right, here we're going to, you know, first we're going to appeal to the 5-year-olds. Then we're going to appeal to the others. And, you know, as it goes on, we're going to appeal closer and closer to all ages of this movie. And so I think that's kind of what their plan is. I don't know exactly what they're wanting, but it got the 5-year-olds really excited. So, you know, they will most definitely be talking about this movie. And like, oh, I can't wait to see this movie. Oh, Mom, we have to go see this movie. Oh, Dad, take me to the movie. Da, 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 da. So, and it's not like a movie geared toward any specific gender. And so it's anybody can do it. Both boys and girls will be thinking about this movie. Oh, that looks cool.
Well, yeah. And I think they purposely did that and made it very gender neutral.
Right.
Because right away, if boys say, oh, that's a princess movie, that's for girls, they're not going to give it time of day here on out.
Right.
Well said, marketing expert.
Well, thank you. I try, and that's the goal in life, right? But, you know, it makes me wonder if we'll see a lot more of Kristoff in the other trailers.
Probably.
Just to kind of amp up his role. But
there's Kristoff, and then there's, like, a pretty boy, right?
Yes. Hans.
Hans.
I don't know if he's a... okay. He is. Comparatively.
Yeah. If you look at the difference.
He's got the Prince Eric garb down perfectly.
Yeah, and he's a ginger. How cool is that?
There you go.
Hey, other than Hercules, I don't think we've really had a ginger lead.
Hercules was a ginger?
Yeah. He has red hair.
I would never have
I don't know about that.
Oh, check it out, and you will be like, my mind's
then again, boggled. Then again, I've only seen, like, Hercules, like, 0.5 times.
I don't think
I ever made it through the whole
thing.
Which
is a travesty.
When you're watching movies at school, there's no guarantee you'll get to see it at least more than one day, and class periods only go 50 minutes.
Yeah, but that's a movie you have to watch, honey. Don't even make excuses. Go watch it. It's on Netflix now. Woohoo!
Oh, okay. No excuse, then.
No excuse.
But I think that we'll see the trailer that we're sort of looking for and anticipating before Planes. I really think that's when they're going to let floodgates open, and we'll see, you know, more.
All right, folks. So leading into our, like, main discussion on Monsters University, so there's one... it's kind of an animation principle, talking about character appeal, but today we're just going to kind of talk about character design. And besides the lighting, and besides, like, the use of color, and the really awesome, like, technical achievements of this film, I think there's something to be said about the, like, character design team for Monsters University. I mean, as they said in the film, like, no two scarers are alike, but, like, every character in this film is, like, different. Well, okay, besides that one sorority that has, like, the girls that are all the same.
Yes.
But, like, I just think it was cool, like, in this movie, I can only imagine, like, how hard the animators worked to, like, you know, design, render out, and do colors for every single monster at the university. I mean, there are obviously monsters that show up in, like, almost every scene, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, how did you, like, what did y'all think about that in the movie? Like,
I thought it was really impressive, because there were types of monsters. Like, obviously there are monsters that could swim and monsters that can fly, but for the most part, like, they're all the same. It sort of reminds me of those yellow-bellied Sneetches from the Dr. Seuss story, where some have stars on their bellies and others don't, and they kind of go through that machine, and eventually, like, everyone has stars, some people don't have stars, some people have a ton, some people have little, and that's kind of how I felt about Monsters University and the monsters there, because everyone is different. Some are furry, some are slick, some are smooth, some have lots of eyes, some have lots of tentacles. Like, there wasn't, like, a archetype of, like, monsters. Like, you're a tentacly monster, and you're a this monster. You know what I mean? It was just sort of like you pulled the lever and random body parts came out, and that is kind of what all the monsters were, which was really cool.
Yeah, like, you got all shapes and sizes, and yet they all kind of worked. They all looked interesting without looking awkward, unless they wanted them to look awkward, and it's like, from a design standpoint, it's like just, like, super fascinating how they, like, achieved all of that. Like, how cool would it be to work at Pixar and be like, okay, I'm the guy that designs the monsters that are in the background that, like, aren't, like, the main characters, but you, like, still see them. So, like, yeah, for the past, like, couple of months, I've just been drawing monsters. You know, getting ideas from my 4-year-old, you know, visiting kindergarten classes. Hey! And so, it's just super cool. Like, another thing I liked about this film is that without getting into certain characters and stuff, like, they really got, like, groups down.
Yeah.
Like, they were, like, the sororities and fraternities, even, like, the duos that you see in the film. You have, you know, you could have a big, you know, a big, excited, kind of triangular shape, like, muscular, like, testosterone hoo-ha, hoorah guy next to, like, a girl who's, like, really not interested in anything, and she's just kind of, like, you know, basically, like, if you took Aubrey Plaza and made her into a monster, basically. Almost exactly at people, actually. And so, like, they really figured out how to make groups of characters interesting in this film.
Yeah.
Because, like, the group is kind of a big idea and a big, like, theme of this film, or, like, a motif. And, like, they really thought out every character. You can, like, look at a monster and see real people in it.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. I use the example of the sorority that's all, like, the goth, like, kind of the chola goth sorority. And it's, like, the way they were dancing and, like, their makeup and stuff. It's just, like, so, like, I've seen that before. And it's so true.
Yeah. They were able to infuse real-life personalities and people and, yeah, maybe demographics.
It trends as well.
Yeah, and make those into a monster. So, you know, like the goth sorority. Yeah, so they were able to, you know, the pink, bubbly, you can imagine they were probably blonde girls. They're all, you know, similar, and they have sort of the personality that you would see, and then, you know, the body sort of matches. And others, they had bodies that didn't really match, I guess. All shapes and sizes. And I thought that was really interesting and unique. One thing I thought was really funny in the movie was particularly the large monsters that are bigger. Like, there's tall monsters, but then there was, like, that one playing frisbee on sort of the main campus.
That was kind of a stretch for me.
I was like, I don't even know how you would function in this world. Like, I get it, and I'm sure you do, but that's just mutant of a mutant right there.
Yeah. Well, and then also there's the one playing football, or is that the same one?
Oh, no, that's a different
player.
One. Oh, yeah.
Wham! Wham!
And then the big sluggy one.
Yeah.
Oh, I love him. And then the little slug monster. Oh, I can't be late to class on the first day.
Did you stay to the end?
No, I didn't.
Oh, no.
Shanna, really, we really had to get out of there. There were just too many kids.
Yeah! Oh, well, yeah.
Now, okay, well, I'll have to go see it some other time. Now, another thing that goes into, like, cool character design that I think Monsters Incorporated got right, and this, it's not really visual, but it's just kind of conceptual-wise, is naming the monsters after, like, giving them, like, normal people names, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mike Wazowski, Sullivan, Randall Boggs. Those are, like, real people names that you would, like, see, you know, see at, you know, at where you work. Now, if my prediction is that if DreamWorks did this film, or if like Sony did this film, or like someone else, the monsters would all have monster names.
Yeah.
You know what
like
I mean?
Like Fangy Fangington or something.
Yeah.
Fangy Fangington, exactly. Now, now there are names that kind of hint at the personality, like Hard Scrabble.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. Now, but I think it really worked. That was like such a smart move because you're trying to sell a bunch of characters that are supposed to be scary.
Mm-hmm.
When you think monster, you think scary, and scary is bad. Just ask any 3-year-old, and trust me, there were like a bazillion of them at the showing that I saw. Now, they all got scared at some points of the film, but I think that was inevitable because they were small children, but winning the trust of your audience is about helping you relate to the world of your movie, and giving the monsters real people names just kind of made it funny and quirky, but it also helped you like relate to them.
Yeah. Like this is a movie about being scary and gruesome in a way. And well, not even say gruesome, but this is a movie about being scary, and we as an audience accept that, and it's not scary to us for that reason, because
yeah.
we've become acclimated to their world, opposed to, well, unless you're a 3-year-old in Mason's Theater, you still are scared.
Yay! But so yeah, I thought that was really cool. Like Pixar was really smart doing that, and it helped. Like, well, I mean, Pixar's really good at establishing a world in all their movies. You know, this is what happens. These are the rules. Just accept them. And so I just think it's cool because, like, everyone who's been to college, like, they know a Randall. They know who the Sullies are. You know, they've dealt with Hard Scrabbles.
I had a pre-cap teacher who totally was like her.
Oh, my gosh. Everybody in the BYU animation was like Hard Scrabble. But I'm just kidding. They're actually pretty – everybody's actually pretty cool. But I did see a lot of myself at my BYU days in that film. But anyway – super cool characters, like that's like a strong point of the Monsters universe, you know. I'm not a huge fan of Monsters Incorporated, but they really did something cool there because like the monsters are so cool looking, and they're not that scary, you know, so it's like it's funny.
Well, yeah,
it's like the haunted mansion at the parks, you know. It's like a fun scary.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're brightly colored and they're really cute, and you know, they're not you know, having limbs hanging down and blood off, you know, blood on their lips and stuff like that to really guess make them scary. Just it's more of the attitude that they take on and the persona that they take on when they're doing the scaring. But like in real life, they're really not that scary. Just good. I really think it's a testament to Pixar and how much work they put into their movies, how different all of these characters are, because they could have kind of just gone the easy route and made, you know, groupings of monsters that are kind of similar to make it easier on them, but they didn't. They went above and beyond. Every monster is different, and it really creates the richness of this world.
Yeah, definitely.
And one last thing, so you kind of mentioned, like, everyone's different, except for the Python Nu Kappa, which I kind of talked about in last episode, but I was thinking about it, and I think kind of the reason that they are all the same, and they are the only monsters in the movie that are all the same, is because they represent a crowd that kind of relishes and appreciates and prizes, you know, uniformity and achieving this one standard of, I guess you would say, beauty or perfection in a way. And so they really kind of made that very literal with all of those sorority sisters. I mean, apart from, you know, having different colored hair and skin, they all have 3 eyes. Their hair is all styled exactly the same. They're all wearing the exact same outfits. And so I think that's a bit of a little social commentary on, you could definitely say sororities that are like that, because there are sororities that, you know, they're really all about that. So I liked that move, and I understand why they did it. It's just, it definitely stands out when you realize nobody else is the same.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. Ha ha. Huzzah. First off, did you guys like the Blue Umbrella?
Blue Umbrella was so cool.
So good. Yeah, there was like those screen gems or whatever, like where they talked about the trailers and stuff. They talked about it and how they did this in order to highlight, in order to highlight the fact that their photorealism in animation.
The photorealism is nuts.
Yeah.
Insane.
Well, yeah, when I was with Jared, nuts. The first thing he said, he's like, is this a real movie or this animation? I was like, yeah, this is animation, you know. So it was impressive. Once you kind of realize that, you're like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
it's come a long way from,
yeah,
you know, Toy
Story.
Toy Story.
Now,
what about the story?
Story. Now, I talked about Disney's formulas. I like how Pixar will almost do the same thing, but it will always surprise you at the end. It'll always take it a step further and always make you feel stronger for like the story.
And so in what way did they do that for this?
Well, let's look at The Incredibles. Like, it's like Bob Parr hits a low point, and then he gets his family together, and they start beating things up. And then just for a little bit, at the very end of the film, they make everything crash down again because Syndrome captures the baby and is going to do, you know, gosh knows what. And it's like a helpless situation. And so, like, Pixar, like, Finding Nemo did this. Finding Nemo is an emotional roller coaster, folks. Finding Nemo did that. It's like things will work out. And they'll hit the low point, you know, that we see in almost every film, every animated film ever. And then Pixar will always, like, surprise you and do something further. You know, Find Nemo, oh gosh, Nemo, we're in a whale. How can we get out of this? Oh, wait, we got out, it's a miracle. Oh, no, Nemo's dead, I'm really sad. Oh, no, I found him again, he's not dead. Oh, no, he's in this giant net, you know. You know, oh, he got out of the net. Oh, no, he looks dead. And, you know, so it's like up, down, up, down, up, down. And so Blue Umbrella did just that. Like, it's like, oh, no, he's flying away in the wind. How is he ever going to get to the red umbrella now? Oh, look, there's the red umbrella. Okay, he's almost made it. Oh, look, the city's helping him. It's a miracle. Hit by a bus, you know. Oh, sorry. Spoilers, everyone. Oh, they know they shouldn't be listening to this if they haven't seen the movie yet.
Yes.
And so, if you ask me, Pixar, okay, like everyone knows, Pixar is all about the story. I would argue that they're all about the story and the best characters. But they did it here, and I think that's why Pixar like tends to win all the short film, you know, Academy Awards and stuff like that. And who can blame them? They've got like the best. They've got a real handle on story, and what will get the audience engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Some people were in tears, and some people gave like a short scream when the Blue Umbrella got hit by the truck.
Seriously?
Because they can... Well, I bet you that there are some people in the audience who could relate to the sudden horror of being hit by a car. You know? And that probably hit some... You know, that probably, like... What do you call it? That probably struck them, you know?
Struck a nerve?
No pun intended. No. And,
this is probably not the thing to be doing puns with.
And so it's just a really good delivery. Like, the story was just as good a delivery as ever. And I don't know, watching that, I kind of, like, ran this little analysis of Pixar's story in my head. You know, you can go on Pinterest and see that little graphic of, like, you know, story according to Pixar. You know, it's a bunch of points and stuff. But
yeah.
But that's what I've noticed over the years, and I'm sure some of our listeners would agree.
So I left that short, and I liked it, and I thought it was spectacular. It was breathtaking. It was beautiful, and it was definitely an achievement. But I didn't love it. Like, immediately, that wasn't my favorite short I've ever seen. The story, I mean, it came so close after Paper Man that I sort of saw similarities between that.
Yeah, so did I.
And for that reason, I guess it was kind of like, oh, I've kind of seen this. Yes, it was in a different way. It was with umbrellas, and it was beautiful, but I was like, oh, well, this is two people trying to get together in a city and they have these things that are separating them.
And I think here's what I think was a huge difference between Paper Man and this was the music. Like, this one, the music was very,
very quirky.
Like a MacBook Air commercial?
Yeah.
Very quirky, very Zooey Deschanel, very.
Yeah.
You know?
But it didn't change really at all. But, you know, in Paper Man, it had a different, like, every different part, the music played just as much of a part in the story as anything that you saw. It was very emotion driven, and you're just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. It just gets like deeper and deeper. But this one, it was just the same song straight through. So I think that might have also influenced the way that you felt about the whole thing. You didn't really have too much of a high or low with the music, and so that kind of left you kind of, oh, that was nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Left you with a good feeling.
Yeah. But, I mean, wow. Just wow.
Just like all, you could really, like, even, I love how they took ordinary objects around the city and gave them expressions and emotions, and you could really read it really well, you know, even though it was so subtle and so small, you know, it makes you think that, hey, this could be really going on and we would never notice.
Yeah.
You know, I like the car is about to hit the umbrella and the LED sign is like, turn left, turn left, turn left, turn left, turn left, you know, he's like,
Yeah. And I like how they introduced us to the characters. You know, it's just raining, and then slowly it's the mailbox, and we see, oh, the two bolts in the mailbox and the thing, and, you know, the handle are the smile. And then you see the rain gutter, and then you're introduced to more and more, and it's cool. And then you see the umbrellas, and it goes from there. So they did a good job.
Yeah. So, yeah, blue umbrella, really good.
So let's jump into the main discussion, peeps.
Peeps, huh?
Yep.
It's not even Easter.
Monsters University, we give our heart to you. We want you to be proud of us, whatever we may do. Wherever children are dreaming, we'll bring the night.
And so we've talked about monsters, let's talk about the university and go on into our main discussion.
So here we are for the main event, the main discussion. It's our final review session of Monsters University. This is the one we have all been waiting for all summer, all last year, all this year, and it's finally here.
Welcome to the scare floor.
How do I become a scarer?
I'm officially a college student!
Mike Wazowski.
James B. Sullivan.
Like Bill Sullivan?
He's my dad.
I expect big things from you.
I just need to ace my classes, graduate with honors, and become the greatest scarer ever.
What? Were you kissing my hand?
And what about you with all your shedding?
I don't shed.
Really?
The star player has just arrived.
You're my hero!
Yeah! Slow down, Squirt!
This is a party for scare students.
I am a scare student.
I mean, for scare students who actually, you know, have a chance.
Just wait, Hotshot. I'm gonna scare circles around you this year. Behold, my brothers of Uzma Kappa!
I'm Art!
Tell you, man, let's keep a dream journal!
I'm a dance major! And I'm not.
They're not exactly the scariest group in the world.
Smile!
Timer!
I thought I could show everybody that Mike Wazowski is something special.
Just reach deep down and let the scary out!
Boys! Oh, scary.
Up top.
The whole school is finally gonna see what Mike Wazowski can do.
Time to go to work.
Scary feet, scary feet, scary feet. The kids in the bathroom. Angry poodle. Jazz clown. My Aunt Phyllis. In the morning.
Quiet.
What's so scary about a little old librarian?
I said.
Move it, move it.
Hey! I want a piece of that action.
Tentacles and serpent's wings, they...
Can't wait to start scaring with you, brothers.
We're gonna rip you to pieces.
Don't go in there.
Have fun, kids. I'll just be here listening to my tunes.
What a show, folks. What a show.
This movie was really good, really awesome. I did a review, and I honestly think this is probably one of the best movies of summer 2013.
I agree.
I mean, I haven't seen them all.
The only movie I've seen this year was Epic. Oh, and The Great Gatsby. So
this is definitely one of the more look forward to movies. You know, Disney fans are waiting for it because Disney is Pixar and Pixar is Disney, more or less. And Pixar fans are excited. Families are excited. Little kids are excited. So it's here. Okay, so let's just start off and go straight into the discussion. So one of the very first things we see is we are introduced to little Mike.
So cute. Like, he comes out just, like, all bright-faced and just look like they really mastered the, like, Puss in Boots effect. You know, it's got those eyes that just, like, I mean, he's got his one big eye that's just, hi, everyone. And you really started to root for him from just that first shot. You're like, I want you to win, whatever you got.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that everyone's mean to him, like, right away. Like, he's, like, the nice, sweet kid who gets bullied. For no reason, other than the fact that he just doesn't quite fit in.
Well, it's because he's not scary.
Yes, because he's not scary. And this continues, you know, as we go on later. Like, he's still not cool. And, you know, he has to, you know, be buddies with the teacher, which is always like, oh, I could imagine how that could go. But it's just kind of sad.
All right, right, Nancy?
Honestly, that
okay,
was...
right, Nancy? Please don't call me that.
Oh, I had one of those flashback moments. Because, I mean, growing up, I had some of those moments where it's like I wasn't really like the popular one or anything like that. So I, you know, was very much close to my teachers. I was like, hi, teacher, you can be my friend. Like, it was like, oh, I've so been there, Mike.
You know, but it endears us to him. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Right away, we like him if you haven't seen the first one and you don't already like him. But you realize his resiliency, like how, oh, yeah, it doesn't even faze him. He just keeps going and he's just excited. He has a lot of energy and passion and it continues. And we see that it continues through, you know, his studies until he finally gets accepted to Monsters University.
I don't really remember that much about Mike from Monsters Incorporated because it's been a while since I've seen it. But like they really go into like Mike's like past and that he like really really worked hard to get where he got, you know.
Yeah,
like he really has the spirit of like keep moving forward, you know.
Oh yes. He embodies Walt Disney himself with one eye,
doesn't
of course.
With doesn't
one
eye. He?
You know, and I liked the way that they transitioned to that because we're introduced to Mike. We know what his dream is. We know what he wants to. And, the cool scarer gives him his hat. And then he's been holding on to that hat forever.
I know.
Frank McKay, the famous scarer, and, yeah, gives him his hat. And then he keeps that hat and he continues. And we see that it's a big part. You know, it's a relic from a field trip. It's a relic from a field trip that meant a lot to him that started his path of becoming a scarer. So then they transition to the opening credits, which I thought were really cool. They're definitely kind of a throwback to the Monsters Incorporated credits. They're a little different style, but still it was a little different style, but it still definitely worked. To me, it felt a bit more like the style of animation in the short Your Friend the Rat from Ratatouille.
Yeah.
And I liked that. And I really liked how these credits, they played a purpose. Like, unlike Robin Hood, which we just talked about, which is just placeholder. I mean, this transitions from little Mike to how he studies and he works really hard. He gets accepted to Monsters University to, bam, animation of him on the bus getting ready to go.
Way to go, Pixar. Mm-hmm. Way to lead into it.
I love it. And I love how excited Mike is. Like, you could see, like, in the concept art that they were showing and stuff that, like, Mike is just, like, got his books, got his uniform. Oh, they threw in the gag from the commercial that he was in from the first film. You know, when he gets a student ID, he's like,
I'm an university student!
Yeah, he's like, I'm official now! If you think that he's going to get all upset, you know, it's like, oh, man, he's a cute kid.
Yeah.
I thought his roommate was going to be Sully. And so when he opens the door and Randall is there, I was like, oh, no, it's Randall.
Yeah. Yeah, and okay. I think they did a really good job of hiding that because you kind of expect right away, like, oh, there's going to be this tension between the two of them, and it's going to be Mike and Sully, it's Mike and Randall, and, like, Randall's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and we get into, like, Randall's kind of terrifying transformation. It's subtle but terrifying transformation in this film, but I love how he starts squinting around for the first time because he takes off his glasses because it gives away his invisibility. And then he starts squinting and you're like, oh my gosh, it's Randall. And so I thought that was cool.
Funny, I never put that together as far as why he was always had that look on his face of squinting and looking deeply. I'm like, that's right, because he took his glasses off.
Yeah, so they did a really good job of tying things from this first movie to this movie and kind of explaining how certain things happen, so I like that, but they didn't go overboard. Like Mason was mentioning about the college ID, they kind of go back to that gag of, you know, him being out of the picture, mostly, and it's funny, but they don't, like, keep referring back to those old gags. It's its own separate movie, but with little hints of things to throw us back to there. I liked when he was walking around the university for the first time and, like, wide-eyed college student with his mouth open, just staring, taking everything in. Like, I felt like I was first-time student there. So I think they did a really good job. And, you know, as they were doing that part, I really liked looking at the architecture because I was listening to an interview on the Pixar Post. They were invited to go to the press day. And they got to interview Dan Scanlon. And they're actually, like, pretty good friends with him because they went to the press day, or Julie went to the press day, and then they went to a charity event later in Michigan, and they got to meet him again. And in one of these interviews, it was one of the guys who did the architecture, and they incorporated a lot of, like, classical architecture. And, like, when I got that newsletter from Monsters University that got mailed to my house, it's like they'd been on the first thing. It said, you know, scare program number one for year 729 in a row. So they create this richness. This has been here a long time. So there's, like, the cobblestones and the everything. It looks old and kind of refined in a way.
They tap the foot of the statue before they go in on their first day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
And they pass into the building. I was like, that's so awesome.
Well, and I liked just the little teeny things, kind of the blink and you miss it. You know, there were eyeballs everywhere. You know, a lot of architecture has circles, these eggs and darts, and they replace the eggs with eyes, and then there were fangs, you know, as archways. And they just did a really good job of meshing it into the monster world.
Yeah, well meshed.
Well meshed.
I really liked the orientation girls, like as the guides as they're like showing you around. They're like super peppy. Oh my gosh! Okay, stay together, everybody. All right, as we go over here and on to registration. Yay! It's like wow, that's
wasn't there a rhyme going along with that? Like I'm A. Enjoy your day.
Yeah, there was, and I like
I'm K, the RA.
It was good.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. The scare games, they kind of drop that in there before it's really a big deal.
Yeah.
Because they got to go through the first part of the film, you know, Brock Pierce, it's the scare games!
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Claire's like, yeah, it's the scare games. You can, like, try out. Be all scary. I love Aubrey Plaza. I know she's, like, the alternative non-peppy girl actor of, like, the decade. That everyone knows now, but like I really think she's awesome. She's my favorite. She's one of my favorite parts of the film. And then Brock Pearson, like, and then once again they get the duos. Like, how do you make a really interesting duo? Have like a guy who's really excited about everything, and he shows it, and then have another girl that's like on the council and she's excited too, but she like doesn't show it. You know,
oh, she's the president.
She is. The Presidente.
Crazy.
Well, there's got to be somebody who takes things seriously, kind of, to the point where, all right, I got to get these things done. It's got to be good. And, you know, he's definitely the pep and the go-to guy. Like, hey, you want to join? You know, she's not going to be the one getting people to join, but she'll take care of everything else in the background.
And we kind of get introduced to the sororities and fraternities a little bit. I mean, you see Uzma Kappa handing out flyers, and you're just like, oh. Nerds.
Oh, I love
rejects.
And then you see there's the debate team, and that's funny. And then there's the other team, and then there's like the art people, and it's just like
I
this shaggy monster just splats himself into some paint, and then splats himself onto a campus.
That was awesome.
It's like it's so true. And so, then first day of class, right? Scaring 101.
Yes.
Yeah, my job is to make good monsters great, not make mediocre monsters less mediocre. I was like, gah, hard scrabble.
Like I said, I had a pre-calc teacher who was just like that. And, you know, she would make the first week just like so horribly scary. Like she would just be like, like really on you. But then after that first week, she totally settled down and was like one of the coolest people and really, really good teacher, but she purposely did that just to weed out the students that didn't want to be there.
Well, Hardscrabble is not quite like that.
Hardscrabble is not like that. But
she's very hard-nosed the entire time. Thing is, she's supposed to be this epic scarer, you know, and then her scaring canister is sitting there, and it's the original one, and, you know, the scare is even still in there.
It's the one that broke the world record.
Yeah. But she's not scary to me, and she's actually kind of like a cool character. Like, I like her because she is so stern and focused and organized and... You know, she has standards, and if you don't meet them, you're not going to get into the scare program.
Well, the way she enters is very Maleficent-esque. You know, she just kind of swoops in there, and it's like all the curtains close and everything, and you're like, she knows how to make an entrance.
Well, I mean, scaring is all she knows, pretty much. I mean, she's really good at it. She'd be flying around, and then there's this kid next to us who was like, Mom, it's a dragon. Mommy, that one's a dragon. It's a dragon. I was like, dragons and monsters. I'm like, kid, there's no dragons and monsters university. Come on. But anyway. Oh, yeah, and then we're introduced to Sully. I don't know. His last name's Sullivan. What's his first name?
James P. Sullivan.
James P. Sullivan, right. And he comes in. We've all seen that guy. You know, the guy who's got, like, he's a famous name, you know, and he doesn't come to class prepared because everybody provides him with what he needs, you know?
Yeah.
And he's, like, the cool guy. I like...
He's talented, and just by his merits alone, it's like, well, okay.
Well, he's sort of talented, you know?
He thinks he is.
Because after the frats get a hold of him and, like, want to recruit him and stuff, and he thinks he's great, you know, over time, Mike puts his perseverance to the test, and, you know, and he succeeds in that class, but then Mike, you know, Sully just does the same thing over and over again. You know, and even his professor, who's like, "Oh, Mr. Sullivan, we'll expect great things from you." You know, even he is like, you know, what is he like? One scary face does not a scarer make, or something like that.
Yeah.
He's like, meh.
Well, I appreciated that because it kind of brought him down to a level where, you know, he was on this high horse and this pedestal, and then it's like, no, like, you're scary, yes, in one way. So, meh. And then, you know, because this movie's all about Mike's story. Monsters Incorporated was kind of more about Sully. So in
it
here,
really
we're really invested in Mike, and we kind of want Mike to beat Sully in a way, even though we know they're best friends and we like them both. But I'm like, yeah, 1 point for Mike.
Yeah, Mike really proves it. Mike really shows his stuff in this film. Like, the only thing that is wrong with him is that he's not the classic scary image, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, a big conflict in the film.
Well, and they set it up, like, Pixar does this in a really, really great way. They set it up like you think, okay, he's going to prove them wrong. You know, that all it takes is hard work, and he's just going to make it, and he's going to study his way to the end, and he's going to, you know, make it back into the scaring program. But that's really not the lesson at all, and we'll talk about that later. But, like, did you guys get the impression at the beginning of the movie that, I mean, I hadn't seen any of the trailers, so it gives the impression that, like, this is all gearing up to the final exam, you know, when they first introduce it. You're like, oh.
Yeah, when it already came back to, when he's already crossing the checks out to December, I was like, hey, what?
Yeah.
Already?
Yeah, 15 minutes
Whoa.
In?
Let's go to lunch after this.
Yeah.
You're very right. It's cool because, like, the main conflict of the film doesn't even show up until the fiasco at the final exam. I love their clunky old scare simulator.
Yes.
They make it interesting because they really put effort into, like, creating this world of a school where you learn how to scare. Like, this is where they design the doors, you know? And they're, like, working on their doors and they get tested by professors, you know? That's funny. And they're like, okay, well, give me, like, a zombie. Give me, like... Give me this. Okay, the kid is... It's like, I'm a 7-year-old who roars. She's like, okay, if you were going to let me finish, I would say that this 7-year-old is afraid of clowns, which means that a lion roar would not make it... And so it just sounds so technical. Like, they make it seem, like, real, you know? Mm-hmm. Another way Pixar gets you really immersed into the world of their movies.
Yeah.
Wait, can we go back really fast? One thing that really, like, I loved about Sully was when he comes in with the pig into... He comes into Mike's room with the, like, quote-unquote pig thing.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like, hey, I just stole this from the other university. Ha, ha, ha. And it
from
totally...
Fear Check.
Yeah. It totally reminded me of the Simpsons episode where Homer goes back to college. And he's like, basically the entire thing, he thinks it's going to be, like, a really bad episode of Animal House where they just, like, go and they try and play pranks on the other people and everything. And so he's... got this pig, and that's all I could think. I was like, ah, not just Simpsons. Awesome.
That was a scary looking pig.
It all was.
Curly.
Straight. Curly. Straight.
So that ties us in, you know, to this big party that all the fraternities and sororities are having. And, you know, Mike, I feel really bad for Mike because I think a lot of people can relate to this. They get to college and they're there to study, but then they kind of forget that the university. Part of it, if you want it to be, is the social aspect, you know? So there's some people who never go out and all study all day, every day. And that maybe is kind of the reason you're there. And I definitely had semesters where that's all I did. But then other people, it's like, yeah, I'm there to study, but I'm there to party, you know? And they go out into this courtyard and he brings the, you know, the pig and they finally catch it. And then Sully, you know, gets seen by the cool Roar Omega Roar fraternity and, you know, becomes one of them. Yeah, it's just like that.
This is for scare students, but I am a scare student. I mean, scare students with potential.
Aww.
You know, whatever. I know, and Sully's like, well, he's not my friend, but I'll talk to him. I was like, ugh. Typical college jerk.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so they ruin Dean Hardscrabble's, like, precious canister. And then during the final exam, and they also prove that, you know, Mike knows what to do, but he doesn't even get a chance because she doesn't consider him to be scary traditionally. Mm-hmm. And so it's very rough. I don't know if any of our listeners have, like, heard the words, you just don't have what it takes. Good luck in your future endeavors from, like, their program that they fought to be in. Mm-hmm. It's heartbreaking. And so you can really feel that. And especially since, you know, it was kind of Sully's fault that Mike got the undue attention from Dean Hardscrabble, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's the sad thing is, like, sometimes things are out of your control. It really mm-hmm. is Sully's fault, and I guess Mike could blame him and get mad, but he doesn't for the most part, and he kind of just moves on. And that's kind of like a lesson that, you know, sometimes we need to take. It's like, sometimes you just can't do anything about it.
I just, like, for the rest of the time, Sully just, like, marches next to Mike and glares at him for, like, weeks and weeks. Oh, I love the winter semester. Some people believe that canister engineering is a waste of a monster's potential. Let's open our books to this. I was like, that's so freaking funny.
Yeah.
And they really bring out the bleak winter colors in this film. Like, if you haven't read all the articles about the lighting in this film, like, you need to go back and read them, because, like, Lightspeed, the lighting technicians at Pixar, like, they beefed up the lighting to be super realistic in this film. Not as realistic as a Blue Umbrella, but they made it, like, so much better. Quick Notes version, it's called ray tracing, where the computer, like, literally simulates rays of light and, like, bounces them around in your environment. And so it's very taxing on computer memory, you know, on the memory that's available and render times. But with technology being as advanced as it is, they were able to pull this off. It really looks incredible. But besides manipulating awesome lighting, they manipulated colors really well. Like, in the winter semester, things get real bleak, you know, and it changes with the mood of the film, you know? Mm-hmm. I really like it. I also like how the human world is not as colorful and saturated.
No, yeah.
Yeah. As Monster's World, and I think that's cool. I also like that this film isn't about humans. But, anyway. So, yeah. And then, you know, the scary games are coming up, and all of a sudden Mike has this crazy idea that just might work, and he's got to be in a fraternity. You know?
So then he goes, and he finds a fraternity.
Oh my gosh. Usma Kappa.
They are fantastic. I mean, all right, first we've got Don Carlton.
Yes.
I liked him.
You know. I just love that he was your typical, you know, middle-aged guy. You know, we've all had these in our classes, like really old guy going back to college, trying to progress his career. And, you know, Don Carlton, sales. And he hands him his card, and just that one frame explains it all. Like, his whole life up until this point, it's just a stark white card. It says his name in black letters. Right underneath it says sales, and that's it. Like, I got a gist of what this guy's life was like up until now.
Yeah.
Not that exciting. Yeah.
It's pretty good storytelling. Hey, folks, my name is Don Carlton, and today's your lucky day. Have you ever asked yourself the following question? Arrest him. Oh, I love him. And then, he's kind of like the underdog, like, hero of this film, little squishy Squibbles.
Squishy, yeah. You know, it was so funny. Every time he'd just, like, kind of appear next to you, and you're like, ah! Like, there are those people out there. It's like, what are you doing? Like, ah! But I liked...
Well, they did that, they played that a couple times to lead up to his talent in scaring.
Yeah.
Right.
Which was
a
fabulous talent. It was, like, very frightening.
It was the creepiest.
It's like, this is your talent, play it.
Well, it was a good job to them, because you look at him in the beginning, you're like, what could be scary about him? And they built that really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
And then we have Terry with a Y and Terry with an I, Perry. Two-headed monster.
You don't really see a lot of them. I mean, they have a few lines, I think.
Yeah. They weren't really my favorite. I know some people really love them, but I liked Dawn better. I didn't really... Squishy was okay. These two were okay. But, you know, it's your typical,
Squishy. Well, this is the longest... This is the latest I've ever been up.
Ever! Oh, man.
They're your, you know, twins, or in this case, conjoined twins, that are complete opposites. But unfortunately, yeah, in their case, there's nothing they can do about it.
There's a lot of good Squishy lines. And Mike's like, don't you worry, fellas. All you need is right here. Aw, heart.
No, me.
Speaking of heart, next up is Art.
Oh, who
actually received a lot of attention. There's a few articles on how they designed him and stuff. It's real interesting.
He kind of reminded me of a cross between a giant sock and a slinky.
Yeah. Character design-wise, they kind of took from kind of awkward-looking people. Like, have you ever seen, like, the motivational speaker thing that Chris Farley used to do?
Yes.
And how he just kind of stoops on his legs and his hands are, like, tiny and, like, in between his legs.
Oh, my gosh.
They kind of took... They kind of took that awkward stance and kind of built Art.
That's awesome.
Out of that it, makes like me it, so he wasn't happy. Like the he wasn't like the main driving factor, but he was one of the factors. Yeah, they actually designed his paint scheme to look like awkward, like long socks, like fuzzy socks.
Yeah.
Well, looking at him originally, like when I first saw these other characters, I thought nothing of this guy. Like nothing really appealed to me. I was like, meh, next. But he turned out to be the breakout star for me. Based, you know, everything that came out of his mouth was just hilarious.
Yeah.
I can't go back to jail! And, yeah, I really liked it. He's a New Age philosophy student. You know, but I also like that they didn't push a lot of that, like, philosophy stuff, like, in the film. He's just, like, this weird, mysterious guy.
Yeah.
That you, like, he's like, yeah, I've been down to that sewer a couple times. It's not my favorite. He's like, you've been down here before?
Like, even for a monster, that's weird.
I have a life outside the house. I have an extra toe. It's not with me, of course. Yeah, I love that guy. He's really funny. Oh, and then Squishy's mom.
Honorary
we're doing member. We're doing an initiation. Oh, so scary. Okay, just pretend I'm not here.
Yeah.
I also like when they're at the Scare Games, the first event. And they introduce Uzma Kappa and no one's clapping. And then you just hear Squishy's mom like, woo! She's like really excited.
I love how as she's coming down the stairs and she's like, oh, don't mind me. And she like starts doing the laundry and it's like super loud. You just see her in the background. She's just kind of like, all I can say is that it looks like she's shaking her groove thing. She's just kind of like bouncing back and forth as she's doing things. I'm like, that's so incredibly awkward.
Well, I know, and then when she drops him off at Monsters, Inc., and she's like, I'll just be in here listening to my tunes.
My jams, my tunes.
Yeah, it was really funny.
And then it's like hard rock.
Seat belts.
Yeah, that, like, unpredictable things about that, like, that I loved. Like, I literally laughed out loud at that part when she busts out, like, the screamo music.
Very entertaining. Now the Scare Games were a good way to have the time pass in the movie, to be super entertaining, and to kind of like show this like underdog story, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you at first when you're like, oh, there's five different Scare Games, where you're like, this is gonna take a long time?
No, I wasn't. But like the rhymy like clue. Intro letters was like, I was like, Survivor. I thought that was a little cheesy. But, no, I thought it was really entertaining. Like, the sea urchins.
Yeah.
Like, that was so funny.
Was that the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first one. And I didn't understand what the sea urchin was about. Was it like, did it contain human toxin? And then I remember that the humans, children aren't really toxic. Are they?
No.
It's just like something they made up to get monsters to not have contact with humans, right?
Yeah, so that's what got me confused. I was like, then what is it? Like, whatever this is,
it's
pretty crazy.
So they got it from the science department. I thought it was really funny. And like, Chris Horn, my guy who works at Lightspeed, he was saying that.
Your guy, huh?
Your guy.
Well, you know, the dude.
He's my guy.
Okay. My contact at Pixar, who is in Lightspeed, all the sea urchins, well, they're not sea urchins. All the little poison urchins are their own light source, you know. And so I guess I was, and the whole scene is lit with those, I think. Like, those are the light sources for that scene. There's probably, like, a teensy bit of, like, ambient light that just kind of, like, makes you able to see everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool. I don't think they couldn't have done, he was explaining that they couldn't have done stuff like that before.
Awesome.
And it's cool, and it's also hilarious because, like, as soon as one hits you, you, like, swell up really quick. It's really gross, actually.
It is. And then at the end where Mike is talking, and it's like half of his face is like boils yeah. over.
Bloated, yeah.
It's like, oh, that's gotta hurt.
Wisdom teeth.
Oh!
Now one of the fraternities got disqualified, and so Uzma Kappa could progress. I thought it was done then and there. I was like, they were in last place, see ya! And I was like, wait a second.
That was fast.
Yeah. And then, you know, I thought some of the other frats and sororities were pretty cool.
Which ones?
Well, Roar is like, you know, your alpha male, you know, like the most prestigious scaring fraternity.
Yes.
Yes.
See, I, having gone to BYU, I don't have much experience with fraternities because there are zero fraternities at BYU except for, I think there's one honor fraternity. But they don't live in a house, or it's not really anything.
It's not a frat frat.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I think a lot of these jokes sort of, like, went over my head, because I never experienced your typical, you know, frat life, or even just going to school with people in fraternities. So that's a completely foreign concept to me. So, not saying I'm sad I can't relate, but it's just, can't relate.
Well, never have I ever been to a frat party or sorority party, but my wife is a Delta Pi. And so she told me, like, how, you know, what it was like and how it, you know, and it's pretty much like in movies.
Yeah.
And then having transferred to A&M, the street I live on is called Fraternity Row, and there are two frat houses on it.
Perfect. I'm sure you get a lot of sleep.
Right next to the condos where we live. Actually, one of them got closed down because it got in trouble, and the other one is, they kind of have crazy parties, but they're mostly just annoying. But,
says the old married guy.
But anyway, no, like the other day I caught them chipping golf balls across our street, like into our neighborhood. You know, like the neighborhoods around your house are just your private golf course.
Why not?
Call the cops on them. Anyway,
good old narc.
I don't know. Jocks was funny because they were like, "Ugh, sporty guy." And then there's like Hiss or whoever.
The Hiss were pretty cool. They were like the underdog that you kind of liked just because of their nonconformist conformity.
There you go. Funny how that works.
I know.
Although some of them were like not very memorable.
No. Yeah, two in particular, Jocks and then Eek. And basically they were more like jock fraternities.
They were like girl jocks.
Yeah, girl jocks. I don't know, like, everyone's wearing Letterman jackets, like, it's a cool thing. Like, is that even a thing in college anymore?
If you wore a Letterman jacket for your college these days, like, I don't know, that's kind of lame. Like, it's more like the t-shirts and the baseball caps, isn't
it? Yeah, totally. You know, and athletes nowadays, they don't wear Letterman jackets. They wear, like, apparel logoed sweats.
Yeah.
And that's the cool thing, is if you're walking around and you're, you know, sweats that are official and only the, you know, athletic department has them, you're like, oh, must be an athlete.
I was not aware that sweats were cool.
Uh-huh. To them, they are.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So, but, you know, like, I understand why they use it. It's like a very traditional motif. More from the 50s, but, yeah. It works, okay? The monsters are a little behind on fashion. Clearly.
It gets the point across.
So yeah, so the scare games are on. I love some of the scenario that they have them do. I love the maze. Okay, explain to me, do they explain why you're not supposed to scare teenagers?
It's not scary.
Yeah, teenagers aren't scared. They don't.
They don't scare easily?
Yeah.
Okay. I love it because it's like, no one understands me. Whatever. But mommy, but dad, I love him.
Ariel.
Pixar has a really good way of, like, in other films it's more blatant, Wall-E, but Pixar is really good at making social commentaries about, like, what's stupid about society. And teenagers are, it's like, oh my gosh, it's so freaking funny.
I forgot about that. Thank you for bringing that up. Made my day.
That's one of my favorite parts.
Whatever.
Whatever. I can do what I want.
And I think the most memorable of all of these was the scare game in the library.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Slow and steady, slow and steady, slow and steady, slow and steady.
Do everything that I do. Do everything that he does. Hold. Hold. Watch.
Shh. 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 Shh.
And Dawn, of course, with his tentacles.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Davy Jones. 100 souls. Anyway. Yeah, I really liked it. That's when it starts coming together. Like, they start really using their heads and teamwork, and it's like they could do this, you know?
Mm-hmm. They've been training, which kind of, like, was a throwback to the training before, you know, in Monsters, Inc. When, you know, Mike, you kind of see that he has these, like, leadership skills, and he really can motivate, and he knows so much that he could, I mean, if he can't do, teach, and he does quite well.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Mike is really the main man in this world. Like, he's got this motivating, he's kind of charismatic, you know, in his own way. He's very organized and will be the type to move things around. And even though he's not really scary, he's like the main man in the scare world. Like, he knows his stuff.
Yeah.
And he's worked really hard to get there. And, like, even looking forward to when things switch over to laughs, he's, like, the main man. He knows how to get people laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is – it's all about Mike. I want to be like Mike.
Yeah, I really like him. He's, like – he's definitely – like Sully said, he's, like, the heart and soul of the team.
Yeah.
He's really got a vision.
So the very last one is the Scare Simulator scare game. Which was kind of a bit anticlimactic, but I guess if you're a monster... I guess it wasn't anticlimactic, but, like, this is it for scaring. It's scaring
kids. It was when I thought that was the end of the film.
Oh, don't... Yes, we will talk about... Yeah, so that bothered me, because I was like, this is very typical. You know, and I'm glad it didn't end there. You know, just with, you know, them winning the games. Hurrah! Mike, yeah. You did it! Now you're in the program! You know, I was I sat there thinking, okay, well, this kind of... But, you know, then we get to see a different side of, they make it really neck and neck, and then finally, you know, Mike, he's gearing up, like, Mike, we need you, need the most epic scare of all time, and he does it, which, I mean, did you buy it, did you see any of that coming?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, like, all the stuff after that?
No, yeah, the fact that he really probably didn't scare.
That he probably didn't do very well. Yeah, I was like... Well, I knew something was up when I was like, well, I didn't, because he was like, rawr, da-da-da-da-ding, oh my gosh, he won,
yeah.
Record breaking. I was like, wait, what? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, in my head, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have something to say about the end of this film on the road. That's for sure. On the podcast, that's for sure. So, yeah.
Then we find out that
it's not the end.
Yeah, that Sully... The whole time, even though, you know, we started seeing a bit more camaraderie and teamwork from him, he really was all about himself. Like, he just wanted to make sure that he got in the program, so he cheated, just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which sets Mike off.
That hurt, though. And then he, like, goes back, just the dialogue right there really was just like, that's really hurtful. Why'd you have to do that, Sully? Why?
What does he say? You're not scary?
Yeah, he says, I don't remember exactly what he says, but he says something like, you're not scary, and you're, you know, leave it to the people who are scary, or something like that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mike goes on his, like, mini quest to, like, really scare someone. And so he locks himself, barricades himself into the door lab, you know, and he marches in. And, like, I freaking love how things escalate. Like, Pixar has really, like, it's the same people from the Pixar films. You know how Pixar people look.
Yeah.
But, like, the techniques of it is so cool. Like, films lately have really gotten into, like, gotten the hair down. Like, mm-hmm. Of course, with Brave, with Merida. But, like, it's a little girl, so her hair isn't that, like, plastic hair stuff that, was on Boo. You know, there's there's a frizzing and there's like strands that are flying all over the place and it's unkempt and stuff. And it's like, hey, way to go. Like, this is really neat looking.
Improvements.
Of course, the human world is actually pretty scary to the monsters.
Yes.
Right. Well, you know, speaking of the hair, you know, did you notice Sully? He's like, most of the time he had this like matted, like back, like his, all of his like body hair is all matted together, but on the top, it's got this like wave thing going.
Yeah, he's almost got like a faux hawk kind of like wavy thing.
Yeah. I was like, nice touch.
And like, children are scary. Well, they all get out of their beds, you know, because he's actually at a camp.
I know, bad luck.
And he's locked himself. I know. And then, bad luck. And then they're all coming up to him. It's like, oh my god, it's so scary.
Poor,
and then
Sully
goes in there to help him, and then they think he's a bear. And I was like, oh, they're gonna know he's a monster. What's gonna happen? And then the lighting also, like, even when Mike and Sully are like at the lake, what a cool shot!
Oh yeah,
like they are definitely at their lowest point. And then even at the lake and stuff, like they're talking and like the colors are all subdued. It really matches the mood. Like, a film is really good when it manipulates color and lights to fit the mood of the film. It really guides the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, technically Pixar is one of the best, and so they do that really well. But anyway, I love how they, in a couple minutes after that, they really do some good scaring, and it's really terrifying, but it's also really funny.
Yeah.
Wait, what happened there?
Well, they go back to the cabin, and for some reason, the park rangers know that they're still in there. And so they formulate this plan on, based on all the theory that Mike has read from every book on scaring. They can power the door from the inside because Hardscrabble deactivates the door and traps them in there.
Yeah.
I don't think that was a good move.
Hardscrabble's never really been full of good moods, but whatever.
But she's supposed to be smart, right?
Yes. I guess the fear is that a human could come in, could open the door and see, and she doesn't want to risk that.
Yeah, and so I love how they scare the park rangers. Like, although I don't know how they do some of this stuff. Like, how do they make the doll walk in the?
Mama, mama.
Beautiful. And then they like do all the whooshing sounds and like scratching sounds and all that stuff. And so, and then Sully like really, really rips into him and like lets all his scariness out. Like, the kids in the audience were like screaming and crying at the same time. Like, I think for that reason this movie shouldn't have been rated G, because then that gives the idea that you can bring a 3-year-old to this film.
Yeah, there are some scary elements.
They are scary thematic elements.
Well, okay, so then all this happens and you're like, yay, you know, she's gonna see this, and then there's like all the tubes and tanks, they start filling up, and you're like, yes, this is, you know, this is going to happen, and they're going to be able to redeem. She's going to be so shocked and surprised and awed by their power that she's going to let them in. And she doesn't.
Well,
they get arrested.
They totally broke the rules. Like, it doesn't matter how well you did.
Yeah,
it's
but
the fact that this, you broke the rules.
Well, that did not apply to Harry Potter, okay?
Obviously.
He breaks the rules all the time, and he always gets off.
Very true. He can't
even get
arrested.
Dumbledore's like, meh, you should be expelled, but it's cool. Next year, just be careful.
Yeah, just don't tell anyone.
Yeah, I mean, he can't even get in trouble with the Ministry of Magic without Dumbledore being like, oh, it's not our abilities that make us who we are. But anyway, he sounded like Bane. But anyway, I think Hardscrabble was so surprised that she didn't know what to say, and so she kind of lost her opportunity to like work something out for them.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they get straight up arrested, and then the lady from the first film, we'll be walking eye on them.
See, that was a fun little.
Yeah.
It's like, she had a sweet, sweet job in, you know, law enforcement, and now she's just pushing papers. Not quite sure what happened there, but. Cool.
They really connect the two films. Number one, they connect Randall with how Randall is so villainous in the first film,
because
he swears that he will never lose
to Sully again,
and that's what kind of moves him to hatch his sinister plot in the second film, but Monsters Incorporated.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And then you see some other people, like you see the Yeti, he's in the mail room. Tampering with mail is punishable by banishment. Did they explain that? Was he banished?
Yeah, they say that, you know, the Yeti was banished. They don't say why in the first movie.
Okay.
But okay, so right before we talk about, you know, this how they get to Monsters, Inc., I don't know, I'm very Hermione Granger. And the fact that they got it spelled tore me apart. I was just like, no, but it's school. That's the only thing that matters in life, you know, which, you know, this is trying to kind of teach a different way of thinking. But I was just like, no, you can't be expelled. What are you going to do now?
Well, you know, there were scares who stayed in the scare program and got on to be successful. So I think the film's really about, like, no matter what happens, you can always find a way, you know?
Yeah, I liked how the moral of the story really wasn't thrown at you, but the moral cut to me was like, you work hard and you can make yourself valuable wherever you go. You know, you learn the rules of the game no matter what you're doing, and then play to win. And so that's what Mike does, and everything is like, it's like, we're not in school right now, but you know, Monsters Incorporated is always hiring in the mailroom.
Yeah,
we can deliver as much mail as anybody's ever delivered. We can win, you know, and everything becomes a game. In every job that must be done, there is an element of fun.
There
you
go.
Find the fun and snap, the job's a game. Like, he knows
dun,
that.
Dun, 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 dun.
Exactly. And he does really good job at, no matter what he's doing, he's learned, okay, here's where I am. I'm going to be the best at whatever I do, no matter what it is. And it'll get me to where I need to go.
Well, I just kind of thought a little differently, I guess. Like, there's that part where Mike's on the lake and he's like, yeah, I guess I just don't have what it takes to be a scare. Like, he realizes that, you know, you're not going to be an NBA basketball player unless you're 6'5". And, you know, the exceptions are Muggsy Bogues. But for the most part, there's just some things that our bodies, our personalities just can't be, no matter how hard we try.
Right.
And I thought that was a bit more of a bolder message to tell, you know, because, like, I saw kind of the theme of talent versus hard work throughout the whole movie. And Sully and Mike sort of represent both sides of that. And so, you know, can you just survive with talent alone, or can you survive with hard work? You know, then we kind of see that, you know, both of those have their flaws. But it reminded me of the book. There's a book called Outliers. And in Outliers, they talk about the 10,000-hour rule, that to be good at anything, and Chelsea's kind of talked about this, you have to be... You know, if you do something for 10,000 hours and really practice for that long, then you'll be an expert in it.
Right.
And, like, then they even, like, did tests with people who had talent. And people who had talent but didn't put in the hours, like, didn't succeed. So whether you have talent or not, like, talent wasn't the determining factor. It was, like, how much work you put into it. And so that applied to Sully, that he needed to teach himself. He needed to apply and actually not go off his talent alone. And then Mike at the same time. So I kind of, like, saw that theme in there. And then, like, it kind of, like, falls flat on its face. It's like, no, you can't be scarer based on this traditional way. And go and they find another way.
Yeah, well, I've also been reading on my Audible journey. You can go to therotoscopers.com/audible and you can get some audiobooks from audible.com. And the book that I'm reading right now is Good to Great. And it talks about these companies that they started out as good companies, but then somehow along the way they made a shift in certain things. They decided what it is that they could be the best in the world at. And they were brutally honest with themselves. Meaning they said, okay, I have this flaw, I have this flaw, I have this talent, I have this talent. Who is it that I am? What can I be the very best in the world at? And what kind of things that I just like to do, but I'm never going to be the very best. And those companies that focused on those traits that they could be the very best at and put those many, many hours in were, and they were able to make that jump from good to great. I saw that concept and that principle in the fact that Mike, he came to grips at where he was and what he could be the very best at. And that was the motivation, and that was the inspiring others, and later on in other movies, other things.
All right, let's just talk about this, like, final foray into Monsters Incorporated. So they go into the mailroom, they meet the Yeti, and then they climb the corporate ladder.
They're janitors, then they're the lunch people.
And they're the best.
And they're the best at all they do.
Yeah.
And then finally, somehow, they end up on their first day...
The tryouts,
floor,
yeah.
which is awesome. And I loved how full circle this movie came. They tied the first movie in with the last movie, and it makes ultimately the ending of Monsters Incorporated that much more satisfying, because you realize how big of a dream it's been for Mike to be a scare. And so for that to happen at the end of the first movie, it's like, oh, finally. And then, you know, Sully, on the other hand, he's been a scare, and he realizes the importance of just a team and, you know, being a part of that team. And in the end of that, we don't really see him putting up too much fuss about scaring.
Right.
Or not scaring.
Yeah. And so it really gets wrapped up, and what a cohesive movie in the end, you know? Although, a couple last details. Where was the Pizza Planet truck?
Oh, I didn't even see. I wasn't even.
I saw the ball.
Oh, nice.
The ball was in.
The ball was on the wall.
When they talk about toxic, everything that the child touches is also toxic.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you had, I always get his name wrong, John Ratzenberger in the film, so he's like their lucky star. But no Pizza Planet truck.
I'm sure it's
is
in there.
It's
in there. It's got to be somewhere.
Maybe it's in the human scene somewhere.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe it is. Something about that. I don't know. It's got to be in there. If it was in Wall-E and Brave...
it's got to be there.
Now, one thing... one little detail that people didn't like about this film, it's on all the discussion boards. I've seen some of our fans talk about it, is that in Monsters Incorporated... So this is the first... In college, this is the first time Mike and Sully meet. Now, in Monsters Incorporated, Mike makes the comment that he has been jealous of Sully's looks since the fourth grade.
Yeah.
And so people on the internet are like, whoa! This movie is like an alternate universe! It's not even canon! And I'm like, folks, if you say you like Star Wars and you're bothered by little pieces of instances of the movies not connecting well with each other, then you have some serious issues, my friend, because you need to really rewatch those movies. I don't care. It could have been like a joke, or you could have been like exaggerating, you know?
Yeah. We talked about this, I think, in another episode, but they basically... The way they go around that, the directors, they're like, yeah, we tried to work that into the story, it just didn't work for the plot, and so we just joke around that that's like a famous monster saying, you've been jealous of my look since the fourth grade. Like, you know? So it's just kind of
cares,
a funny,
people?
Funny way that they're like, yeah, we realize that, but too bad, it's like not important.
that's one goof. But other than that, like Morgan said, like the two films are really well connected. It gets you excited to see Monsters Incorporated.
Yeah. I think these movies could be definitely watched as a pair, one right after the other.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking a Disney Channel double feature.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. On TV.
They would most definitely do that.
Yep.
All right.
Now,
so,
those are just the last little details I wanted to talk about.
So the music was all done by Randy Newman, and as I was realizing, I'm like, he's got a sweet gig. I mean, out of the 14 films that Pixar has released, he's done 7 of them, all the music. I was thinking that he did
and
Wall-E.
Michael Giacchino does the others.
Well, I was thinking that he also did Wall-E.
No kidding.
And Finding Nemo. But come to find out, that's actually his cousin, Tom Newman, who did those two. But I'll admit, I was kind of underwhelmed with the soundtrack. I downloaded the soundtrack, you know, beforehand, thinking that it would be kind of a cool thing to listen to it before I went into it. And I was really kind of disappointed. I felt like there was really no continuity between the two films. In Monsters Incorporated, you had kind of this theme song that like kind of went through it, and you can recognize that as Monsters Incorporated. But I didn't really feel like that one linked to this one ever. And I kind of wish that it would have. I also felt like he kind of kept with the collegiate model a little too much, and it kind of felt a little generic. And there was no, like, one standalone theme song, you know, just like You Got a Friend of Me or, all these different songs that's like, you know, that movie because of that song.
Yeah.
I wish it would have had something like that, but didn't.
Well, I would know. I definitely wouldn't go out and buy the soundtrack to Monsters University because I don't think the film was about music.
No, it wasn't.
It just wasn't a huge element in the film. Like, it was. I don't think the music was meant to be very strong in this film.
But that's the thing. Like, I guess my personality and my background, I liked that. I really wanted to have some type of a musical embellishment in there that I can think, I hear that soundtrack or I hear that song and think, oh, Monsters University. Just like I can do with a lot of his other stuff. And I just felt like, oh.
I mean, thinking about it, it worked great with the movie itself. Like, it did everything it needed to do to keep things moving and keep the movie sounding like it was official. But I just wish it had one extra song, you know? That was my letdown, I guess, why I wouldn't be giving this, like, the biggest rating.
Yeah, the music wasn't like, a strong part of the film. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm giving it 4.5 stars.
Wow. All
right.
I don't know. I should probably give it, like, 5 stars. I don't know. I didn't get why there was a sorority of where all the girls looked the same. And I didn't like Art's voice. I don't think it was hippie enough or, like, new wave enough. You know, some people...
I didn't like your voice, therefore you are not 5 stars.
Therefore, you are not 5 star. No, but, I mean, this is, like, a really solidly animated film, and huge amounts of talent and work went into it, you know. It was just incredible. So, yeah, 4.5 stars.
So, I give it 4 stars. I was thinking about what I wanted, and I was kind of teetering last episode between 4 and 4.5. And I think this is just a really solid movie. I think Monsters Incorporated is a better movie to me, obviously. I mean, granted, I mean, it introduced us to a brand new world, and so when you see it again, the coolness of that kind of loses its effect. But nonetheless, they do a really good job. Great storytelling. It's really funny. It has heart, even though some people say it doesn't. And, like, 4 out of 5 stars is still pretty dang good. So I give it 4 stars just for that.
See, I think just because of the music, I can't even give it 4. Like, it's, I wish, I really, really wish I could, but I'm going to go with 3.5.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Well, it's
music,
like, 3.
Music is weighted very heavy in Chelsea.
Yeah, you really penalize movies if they don't have music.
I do. I'm sorry. But it was, like, I just didn't come away feeling, I felt good, and I felt like, yeah, this was a really good movie, but I didn't feel like, and I don't want to be one of those, like, you know, Pixar, like, slammers. They're like, oh, it's not, like, perfect 100%. It's not Toy Story 1, 2, or 3. Therefore, it sucks. You know, how dare you, Pixar? You know, there's those people out there that are like, oh, you know, kind of like what happened with Brave. But, like, it's not that. It's just, I felt like it was a really good movie. But I didn't feel like it was up to, it was, like, right under my 4-star. Like, barely right under. So, if I gave it 4, it'd be with an asterisk. So we'll go with, like, 3.75.
All right, take it.
Okay. So for Chelsea, it's, for her, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
Wasn't that the whole, like, motto of this movie? Like, it's okay to just be okay?
Oh, that's funny.
So we tweeted a question to our listeners on Twitter, and the question was, what was your new favorite character in Monsters University and why? And so here are the responses we got. So from @BradenRosman, he said, Art, because he steals the show. He is so funny, especially his famous line, I can't go back to jail. I completely agree. 3, Frank F. says, I liked Art because he has some of the best lines in the movie and is voiced by Charlie Day. Milan _ Harrison says, Claire Wheeler. I really liked her personality and voice. She made a great Greek council president at MU. Ben Oros Z36 says, Dean Hardscrabble. Such an interesting and scary character. I loved the design and Helen Mirren's voice. Princess _ Merida said, Claire Wheeler because she's so cool and monotone. Terry/Terry because they're really funny and complement each other really well. And Squishy is adorable. So we're getting a lot of Claire. A lot of Claire and a lot of Art. Here's the last one. It's from Gio22DMartinez. Says, definitely between Art and Don. Art is funny as all heck, but Don had a huge amount of hilarious lines throughout the film. Awesome. I completely agree. I'm glad Don got some love in there. And Art clearly is the show stealer, which is interesting because that's what I thought. And then I really liked Claire, but yeah, all the characters were great. All the characters in Uzma Kappa got a shout out, which is pretty awesome. So thanks, guys. Keep tweeting your answers whenever we ask the question, and you could see it on the next show.
So we're excited to head on into the voicemails. Let's see what y'all got to say.
Hi, Chelsea, Morgan, and Mason, otherwise known as the Rotoscopers. My name is Melissa Kumro, and I'm here to leave my thoughts on Monsters University. I was not disappointed. I went in thinking that it was going to be a wonderful, wonderful movie of hilarity, and I was not disappointed. It was just funny, all the references that they kind of had snuck into there. I liked how they had John Ratzenberger, I'm sorry for, like, butchering his last name, but it was awesome when I freaked out in the movie theater when the Abominable Snowman came on, and I was like, that's why he got banished. I think my favorite character out of all of it, though, was Terry with an I, not Terry with a Y. Because the one line, I'm a dance major! His head next to him just goes, I'm not. I cannot express the hilarity of them in words without just sitting here fangirling on a voice recording. It was awesome to see how Randall and Sully's competition started through the scare games in their freshman year. That's pretty cool. And it was fun to see Mr. Waternoose in the picture collage type thing in Mike's locker at the end of the movie. This was probably one of the most anticipated movies for me this year that was animated. But I don't have any other words really to describe it except for epic, awesome, wonderful, fuzzy, warm feelings of joy. I was not embarrassed to go see this as a 14-year-old girl. But then again, I was a 14-year-old girl. It was the third movie I've ever seen by myself. So it was special for me. But like the one that I actually paid for with my own money without my mom being right next to me. But it was the most fun I had ever had in a movie theater this year for an animated film. Also, before I go, the sorority, the one with where all the girls look together, I forgot what it was called, but I'm just going to call it Pink. The Pink sorority reminded me of the Barbie aisle from Toy Story 2 when they first came on and they were all like in their car and they were talking to Uzmit Kappa, and I just like kind of leaned next to my friend and be like, they're like the Barbie aisle. And then she just looked at me and went like, oh my god. And so I'm surprised they weren't all voiced by Jodie Benson. Anyway, I was not disappointed by Pixar, and I hope that their future movies live up to their legacy. Goodbye. Have fun on your rotoscope adventure of podcastiness, and have faith, trust, and some pixie dust. Bye!
Episode, guys. I'm glad we got to talk about it. We don't do every new movie that comes out, obviously, because it's kind of hard to coordinate schedules and I'll see them opening day and then record, but we do our favorites, and we are not going to lie to you the fact that we are Disney and Pixar fans, and the majority of you guys are too, so that's why we did this one. It was a real treat.
A real treat.
There we go. So you can find us on our website, therotoscopers.com. We have all the latest new animation news, reviews, news, reviews, and what? What are those?
And spews.
Okay. We have all the latest news, reviews, and spews over there. So that's when we give our opinion and kind of just spew out our opinions on the latest things. That's what we're going to call it, the spew corner. So go there. We're always updated with lots of new stuff. There's a great little community. You know, you can comment and other people will respond. And it's really fun to meet other animation fans just like yourself. You can find us on the web all over the place. We're on Twitter, The Rotoscopers. You can find us on Facebook.com/The Rotoscopers. And then our lovely hosts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter, Morgan Stradling. You can find Mason on Twitter. And finally, it's official. Mason S-M-T-X, right?
Yeah, just think San Marcos, Texas. My hometown. That's like the only derivative of Mason that I can find on all social media outlets.
But it's yours.
But it's mine. Oh, it's great. Let's see. I'm checking it right now. I have 53 followers.
Whoa, hot
I've got
stuff.
Yeah. Well, I got like 5 followers after I tweeted like 5 minutes ago. I tweeted about recording, and now all of a sudden, like a lot of people are favoriting it and stuff. Well, whatever. Yeah, it's kind of cool. Like I'm kind of getting used to it, and yeah.
Cool. So again, you can find him on Twitter, Mason SMTX. And you can also find him on his blog, thisanimatedlife.blogspot.com. And
yeah, you can see the Pixar lighting post that like halfway got me in trouble with Pixar and halfway made me like semi-internet famous for like a week. It was weird.
Awesome.
Like if you Google Monsters University lighting, I think my blog post about it, about the global illumination system, is like number 3.
Ooh,
on it. And I was like, wow, that's the whole internet.
Number 3, that's the goal in life.
I was number 1 up until like last week.
Oh, boo. And of course, you can find Chelsea on her website, chelsearobson.com, which goes to her Facebook page, and then you can find her on Twitter, Chelsea Robson. So, also you can find us all over the place, Animated Views. You can find us on Hypeable and anywhere good podcasts are found, Stitcher, iTunes, etc. So keep supporting the show. Keep leaving us feedback and reviews. I think we have about 54, 55 reviews in iTunes, so we'd love to make that 60. Maybe by the next time we record, that'd be fabulous. If not, that's cool. Keep supporting the show.
Written reviews you're talking about.
Yeah, written reviews. Well, no, not written reviews. That's just people leaving stars with no written review and then a review, so both count.
Okay.
You can also, if you like audiobooks and you like hearing Chelsea and me and Mason talking about the books that we're listening to and you want to get in on the action, go to therotoscopers.com/audible for all your audiobook offerings. When a new episode of The Rotoscopers is waiting to be released and you're just kind of twiddling your thumbs, hey, you can educate your mind and listen to something cool on there. And also, if you're shopping on Amazon, which I know everyone does, just support the show. It gives us a little kickback whenever you use our affiliate link, therotoscopers.com/Amazon. And lastly, you can find us on YouTube, therotoscopers.com/YouTube, or the opposite way around, youtube.com/therotoscopers. Whew! I did it.
You talk really fast sometimes.
I know. I listen to myself double speed, and I'm like, whoa, you're really fast double speed.
So why was it going to be like a sonnet? So I was thinking, like, use it.
I'm basically like a real-life Stacey sometimes.
Awesome.
Not all the time.
Way to go.
All right, guys. It's been awesome. Thanks for coming and listening and geeking out with us and freaking out, MUing out. It's all fun. Until next time.
We are the Rotoscopers.
I planned poorly, and I don't have a principal lesson discussion interview or nerdy couch discussion for y'all, so I'm sorry. If you can find a sound effect on YouTube of just like a million children like screaming and cheering.
Add it in right here.
Just yes. Add it in right there, because when we walked in, it was like... We'll just agree with whatever you're saying. We'll be like the guys on the rap songs that are like, yo, yeah,
yeah.
Uh-huh, you know, in the
yeah.
background.
Yeah.
I feel a tear coming in.
Coming in, huh?
It's growing.
Yeah, that's good. Hold on, let me get that cat to shut up. Bob, be quiet.
Best animals with real person names. Awesome.
Come here, Bob. Bob's not very bright. He just likes to ram his head against things.
Not happy, Bob. Not happy.
I'm not happy, Bob. A corporation is like a giant clock. It's like a giant clock. Yes, exactly. Bob, come here. Now Max is... I'm being tag-teamed by a couple of sad cats. Oh, come here, Bob. Come here. Come here, little fluff. I mean, if you could
Maximilian,
see
you come here this instant.
Maximilian, you come here.
That never gets old.
No.
Under your thumb, goof. There's a kid in my visual arts studio that does a spot on impression of Pete.
Really?
He's really funny.
You and him should go back and forth because you do a pretty darn good
okay.
Goofy.
No.
And then
the
record
last day
on your
of our
iPhone.
Studio. So one day at our studio, someone brought. We have TVs, and so we play games. Obviously, somebody brought their SNES and started playing the Goof Troop video game, and I was doing commentary.
Awesome.
I was like, dang it, Max! You're supposed to shoot the pirate! Oh,
Dad.
Anyway.
All right.
I think the cat artillery has died down for the evening.